You touch it, you'll believe it. That's all I'm saying.
You make it sound important to you.
Anderson shifted her feet restlessly.
All right,
Gardner said.
All right, Bobby.
He reached out and grasped the edge of the ship, much as Anderson had that first day. He was aware, too aware, that an expression of naked eagerness had spread over Bobby's face. It was the face of someone who was waiting for a firecracker to go off. Several things happened almost simultaneously. The first was a sense of vibration settling into his hand, the sort of vibration one might feel when one lays a hand on a power pole carrying high-voltage wires. For a moment it seemed to numb his flesh, as if the vibration was moving at an incredibly high speed. Then the feeling was gone. As it went, Gardner's head filled with music, but it was so loud it was more like a scream than music. It made what he had heard the night before sound like a whisper in comparison. It was like being inside a stereo speaker turned all the way up. Daytime turns me off, and I don't mean maybe. 9 to 5 ain't taking me where I'm bound. When it's done, I come home to... He was opening his mouth to scream when it cut off, all at once. Gardner knew the song, which had been popular when he was in grade school, and later he sang the snatch of lyrics he had heard, looking at his watch as he did so. The sequence seemed to have been a second or two of high-speed vibration, a burst of ear-splitting music which had lasted roughly 12 seconds, then the bloody nose. Except ear-splitting was wrong. It had been head-splitting. It had never come through his ears at all. It arrowed into his head from that damned piece of steel in his forehead. He saw Anderson go staggering backward, her hands thrown out in what seemed to be a warding-off gesture. Her look of eagerness became one of surprised fear, bewilderment, and pain. The last thing was that his headache was gone. Utterly and completely gone. But his nose was not just bleeding. It was spouting. 3. Here, take it. Christ, Gard, are you all right?
I'll be fine,
Gardner said, his voice slightly muffled by her handkerchief. He doubled it and settled it over his nose, pressing down firmly on the bridge. He tilted his head up, and the slimy taste of blood began to fill his throat.
I've had worse ones than this.
So he had, but not for a long time. They had moved back about 10 paces from the edge of the cut and seated themselves on a felled tree. Bobby was looking at him anxiously.
Christ, Gard, I didn't know anything like that was going to happen. You believe me, don't you?
Yes, Gardner said.
He didn't know precisely what Bobby had been expecting, but not that.
Did you hear the music?
I didn't exactly hear it, Anderson said. I got it second hand from your head. It just about ruptured me.
Did it?
Yeah. Bobby laughed a little shakily. When I'm around a lot of people, I turn them off.
You could do that?
He took the handkerchief off his nose. It was sopping with blood. Gardner could have twisted it between his fingers and wrung blood out of it in a gory little stream. But the flow was finally slowing down, thank God. He dropped the handkerchief and tore the tail off his shirt. Yes, Anderson said. Well, not entirely. I can't turn the thoughts completely off, but I can dial them way down, so it's like, well, like a faint whisper at the bottom of my mind.
That's incredible.
That's necessary, Anderson said grimly. If I couldn't, I don't think I'd ever leave this goddamn house again. I was in Augusta on Saturday, and I opened my mind up to see what it'd be like.
And you found out?
Yeah, I found out. It was like having a hurricane in your head, and the scary thing was how hard it was to get the door shut again.
This door, barrier, whatever. How do you put it up?
Anderson shook her head. Can't explain. Any more than a guy who can wiggle his ears can explain how he does it. She cleared her throat and looked down at her shoes for a moment. Muddy work boots, Gardner saw. They looked as if they hadn't been off her feet much in the last couple of weeks. Bobby grinned a little. The grin was embarrassed and painfully humorous at the same time, and in that moment she looked completely like the old Bobby.
the one who had been his friend after nobody else wanted to be. It was Bobby's "aw shucks" look. Gardner had seen it the very first time he met her, when Bobby was a freshman English student, and Gardner a freshman English instructor, banging apathetically away at a Ph.D. thesis he probably knew even then he was never going to finish. Hungover and feeling bilious, Gardner had asked the class of new freshmen what the Dative case was. No one offered an answer. Gardner had been about to take great pleasure in blowing them all out of the water when Anderson, Roberta, row 5, seat 3, raised her hand and took a shot at it. Her answer was diffident, but correct. Not surprisingly, she turned out to be the only one of them who'd had Latin in high school. The same aw shucks grin he was seeing now had been on Bobby's face then, and Gard felt a wave of affection sweep over him. Shit, Bobby had been through a tough time, but this was Bobby. No question about it. "I keep the barriers up most of the time anyway," she was saying. "Otherwise, it's like peeking in windows. You remember me telling you my mailman, Paulson, has got something going on the side?" Gardner nodded. "That isn't anything I want to know. Or if some poor slob is a klepto, or if some guy's a secret drinker. How's your nose?"
Bleeding stopped.
Gardner put down the bloody piece of shirting beside Bobby's handkerchief.
"So you keep the blocks up?"
"Yes. For whatever reasons, moral, ethical, or just to keep from going batshit with the noise, I keep them up. With you, I let them down because I wasn't getting squat even when I tried. I did try a couple of times, and if that makes you mad, I understand, but it was only curiosity, because no one else is blank like that."
"No one?"
"Nope. There must be some reason for it, something like having a really rare blood type. Maybe that even is it."
"Sorry, I'm type O."
Anderson laughed and got up. "You feel up to going back, Gard?"
"It's the plate in my head, Bobby."
He almost said it, and then for some reason decided not to.
"The plate in my head is keeping you out. I don't know how I know that, but I do."
"Yeah. I'm fine," he said. "I could use..."
"A drink."
"A cup of coffee, that's all." "You got it. Come on." 4. While part of her had been reacting to Gard with a warmth and genuine good feeling she had always felt for him, even during the worst times, another part of her, a part that was not, strictly speaking, Bobby Anderson at all anymore, had stood coldly off to one side, watching everything carefully. Assessing. Questioning. And the first question was whether...
"They."
She really wanted Gardner around at all. She...
"They."
Had thought at first that all her problems would now be solved. Gard would join her on the dig, and she would no longer have to do this, well, this first part, all alone. He was right about one thing. Trying to do it all by herself had nearly killed her. But the change she had expected in him hadn't happened. Only that distressing nosebleed.
"He won't touch it again if it makes his nose bleed like that. He won't touch it, and he certainly won't go inside it." "It may not come to that. After all, Peter never touched it. Peter didn't want to go near it, but his eye. And the age reversal. It's not the same. He's a man, not an old beagle dog. And face it, Bobby, except for the nosebleed and that blast of music, there was absolutely no change. No immediate change. Is it the steel plate in his skull?"
"Maybe. But why should something like that make any difference?" That cold part of Bobby didn't know. She only knew that it could have. The ship itself broadcast some kind of tremendous, almost animate force. Whatever had come in it was dead. She was sure she hadn't lied about that. But the ship itself was almost alive, broadcasting that enormous energy pattern through its metal skin. And she knew the broadcast area widened its umbrella a little with every inch of its surface she dug free. That energy had communicated itself to Gard, but then it had... what? Been converted somehow. First converted and then blown off in a short, ferociously powerful radio transmission.
"So what do I do?"
She didn't know, but she knew it didn't matter. They would tell her. When the time came, they would tell her. In the meantime, he would bear watching. But if only she could read him... It would be so much simpler if she could fucking read him.
A voice responded coldly,
"Get him drunk. Then you'll be able to read him. Then you'll be able to read him just fine."
5. They had come out on the Tomcat, which did not fly at all, but rolled along the ground just as it always had. But instead of the former racket and roar of its engine, it now rolled in a complete silence that was somehow ghastly. They came out of the woods and bumped along the edge of the garden. Anderson parked the Tomcat where it had been that morning. Gardner glanced up at the sky, which was beginning to cloud over again, and said,
"You better put it in the shed, Bobby."
"It'll be all right," she said shortly. She pocketed the key and started toward the house. Gardner glanced toward the shed, started after Bobby, then looked back. There was a big crag padlock on the shed door. Another new addition. The woods, you should pardon the pun, seemed to be full of them.
"What have you got in there? A time machine that runs on penlights? What's the new improved Bobby got in there?"
6. When he came into the house, Bobby was rummaging in the fridge. She came up with a couple of beers. "Were you serious about coffee, or do you want one of these?"
"How about a Coke?"
Gardner asked.
"Flying saucers go better with Coke, that's my motto."
He laughed rather wildly. "Sure," Bobby said, then stopped in the act of returning the cans of beer and grabbing 2 cans of Coke. "I did, didn't I?"
"Huh?"
"I took you out there and showed it to you. The ship. Didn't I?"
"Jesus,"
Gardner thought.
"Jesus Christ."
For a moment, standing there with the bottles in her hands, she looked like someone with Alzheimer's disease.
"Yes,"
Gardner said, feeling his skin grow cold.
"You did."
"Good," Bobby said, relieved. "I thought I did."
"Bobby, you all right?"
"Sure," Anderson said, and then added offhandedly, as if it were a thing of little or no importance, "It's just that I can't remember much from when we left the house until now. But I guess it doesn't really matter, does it? Here's your Coke, Guard. Let's drink to life on other worlds. What do you say?" 7. So they drank 2 other worlds, and then Anderson asked him what they should do with the spaceship she had stumbled on in the woods behind her house.
"We're not going to do anything. You're going to do something."
"I already am, Guard," she said gently.
"Of course you are," he said a little testily. "But I'm talking about some final disposition. I'll be happy to give you all the advice you want. Us drunken, broken-down poets are great at giving advice. But in the end, you're going to do something. Something a little more far-reaching than just digging it up. Because it's yours. It's down on your land, and it's yours."
Anderson looked shocked. "You don't really think that thing belongs to anyone, do you? Why, because Uncle Frank left me this place in his will? Because he had a clear title going back to part of a crown parcel that King George III swiped from the French after the French had swiped it from the Indians? Good Christ, Guard, that thing was 50 million years old when the forebears of the whole damned human race were squatting on their hunkers in caves and picking their noses."
"I'm sure that's very true,"
Gardner said dryly.
"But it doesn't change the law. And anyway, are you going to sit there and try to tell me you're not possessive of it?"
Anderson looked both upset and thoughtful. "Possessive? No, I wouldn't say that. It's responsibility, I feel, not possessiveness."
"Well, whatever. But since you ask my opinion, I'll give it to you. Call Limestone Air Force Base. Tell whoever answers that you found an unidentified object down on your land that looks like an advanced flying machine of some sort. You might have some trouble at first, but you'll convince them. Then..."
Bobby Anderson laughed. She laughed long and hard and loud. It was genuine laughter, and there was nothing mean about it, but it made Gardner feel acutely uncomfortable all the same. She laughed until tears streamed down her face. He felt himself stiffening. "I'm sorry," she said, seeing his expression. "It's just that I can't believe I'm hearing this from you, of all people.
You know, it's just...
She snorted laughter again.
Well, it's a shock, like having a Baptist preacher advise drinking as a cure for lust.
I don't understand what you mean.
Sure you do. I'm listening to the guy who got arrested at Seabrook with a gun in his pack. The guy who thinks the government won't really be happy until we all glow in the dark like radium watches. Tell me to just call up the Air Force so they can come down here and take charge of an interstellar spacecraft.
It's your land.
Shit, guard! My land is as vulnerable to the U.S. government's right of eminent domain as anyone else's. Eminent domain's what gets turnpikes built.
And sometimes nuclear reactors.
Bobby sat down again and looked at Gardner in level silence.
Think about what you're saying, she said softly. 3 days after I made a call like that, neither the land nor the ship would be mine anymore. 6 days after, they'd have barbed wire strung around the whole place and sentries posted every 50 feet. 6 weeks after, I think you'd probably find 80% of Haven's population bought out, kicked out, or simply lost.
They could do it, guard. You know they could. What it comes down to is this. You want me to pick up the phone and call the Dallas police.
Bobby.
Yes, that's what it boils down to. I've found an alien spacecraft, and you want me to turn it over to the Dallas police. Do you think they're going to come down here and say, please come to Washington with us, Ms. Anderson? The Joint Chiefs of Staff are very anxious to hear your ideas on this matter, not only because you own, well, used to own the land the thing is on, but because the Joint Chiefs always poll Western writers before they decide what they should do about such things. Also, the President wants you to pop around to the White House so he can get your thinking. In addition, he wants to tell you how much he liked Rimfire Christmas. Anderson threw back her head, and this time the laughter she uttered was wild, hysterical, and quite creepy. Gardner barely noticed. Did he really think they were going to come down here and be polite? With something as potentially enormous as this on the line, the answer was no. They would take the land. They would gag him and Bobby, but even that might not be enough to make them feel comfortable. Could be they'd wind up someplace like a weird cross between a Russian gulag and a posh Club Med resort. All the beads are free, and the only catch is you never get out.
Or even that might not be enough. So mourners, please omit flowers.
Then, and only then, could the ship's new caretakers sleep easy at night. After all, it wasn't exactly an artifact, like an Etruscan vase or mini-balls dug out of the ground at the site of some long-ago Civil War battle, was it? The woman who had found it had subsequently managed to power her entire house on D-cells, and he was now ready to believe that even if the new gear on the Tomcat didn't work yet, it soon would. And what exactly would make it work? Microchips? Semiconductors? No.
Bobby was the extra added ingredient.
The new, improved Bobby Anderson. Bobby!
Or maybe it was anybody who got close to the thing. And a thing like that...
Well, you couldn't let an ordinary private citizen hold on to it, now could you?
Whatever else it is,
he muttered,
the goddamn thing must be one hell of a brain booster. It's turned you into a genius.
No. An idiot savant, Anderson said quietly.
What?
Idiot savant. They've got maybe half a dozen of them down at Pineland. That's the state facility for the severely retarded. I was there for 2 summers on a work-study program while I was in college. There was a guy who could multiply 2 6-digit numbers in his head and give you a correct answer in less than 5 seconds. And he was just as apt to piss in his pants while he was doing it as not. There was a 12-year-old kid who was hydrocephalic. His head was as big as a prize pumpkin, but he could set perfectly justified type at the rate of 160 words a minute. Couldn't talk, couldn't read, couldn't think, but he could set type like a hurricane. Anderson pawed a cigarette out of the pack and lit it. Her eyes looked steadily at Gardner out of her thin, haggard face. That's what I am. An idiot savant. That's all I am, and they'd know it. Those things, customizing the typewriter, fixing the water heater, I only remember them in bits and pieces. When I'm doing them, everything seems as clear as a bell. But later...
She looked pleadingly at Gardner.
Do you get it? Gardner nodded. It's coming from the ship. Like radio transmissions from a broadcast tower. But just because a radio can pick up transmissions and send them to a human ear, it's not talking. The government would be happy to take me, lock me up somewhere, and then cut me into little pieces to see if there had been any physical changes. Just as soon as my unfortunate accident gave them a reason to do an autopsy, that is.
Are you sure you're not reading my mind, Bobby?
No. But do you really think they'd scruple at wasting some people over a thing like this? Gardner slowly shook his head. So, taking your advice would amount to this, Anderson said. First, call the Dallas police. Then get taken into custody by the Dallas police. Then get killed by the Dallas police. Guard looked at her, troubled, and then said,
All right, I cry uncle. But what's the alternative? You have to do something. Christ, the thing is killing you. What? You've lost 30 pounds. How's that for a start?
Sir? Anderson looked startled and uneasy. No, guard, no way. 15, maybe, but I was getting love handles anyway, and...
Go weigh yourself,
Gardner said.
If you can get the needle over 95, even with your boots on, I'll eat the scale. Lose a few more pounds and you'll get sick. The state you're in, you could go into heartbeat arrhythmia and die in 2 days.
I needed to lose some weight, and I was
too busy to eat. Was that what you were going to say?
Well, not exactly in those...
When I saw you last night, you looked like a survivor of the Bataan Death March. You knew who I was, and that was all you knew. You're still not tracking. 5 minutes after we got back in here from looking at your admittedly amazing find, you were asking me if you'd taken me to see it yet.
Bobby's eyes were still on the table, but he could see her expression. It was set and sullen. He touched her gently.
All I'm saying is that no matter how wonderful that thing in the woods is, it's done things to your body and mind that have been terrible for you.
Bobby drew away from him. If you're saying I'm crazy...
No, I'm not saying you're crazy, for God's sake. But you could get crazy if you don't slow down. Do you deny you've been having blackouts?
You're cross-examining me, guard.
And for a woman who was asking my advice 15 minutes ago, you're being a pretty fucking hostile witness.
They glared at each other across the table for a moment. Anderson gave first. Blackouts isn't the right word. Don't try to equate what happens to you when you drink too much with what's been happening to me. They're not the same.
I'm not going to argue semantics with you, Bobby. That's a sidetrack, and you know it. The thing up there is dangerous. That's what seems important to me.
Anderson looked up at him. Her face was unreadable. You think it is, she said, the words making neither a question nor a declarative sentence. They came out perfectly flat and inflectionless.
You haven't just been getting or receiving ideas, Gardner said. You've been driven.
Driven. Anderson's expression did not change. Gardner rubbed at his forehead.
Driven, yes. Driven the way a bad, stupid man will drive a horse until it drops dead in the traces, then stand over it and whip the carcass because the damn nag had the nerve to die. A man like that is dangerous to horses, and whatever there is in that ship, I think it's dangerous to Bobby Anderson. If I hadn't shown up...
What? If you hadn't shown up, what?
I think you'd still be at it right now. Working day and night, not eating, and that by this coming weekend you'd have been dead.
I think not, Bobby said coolly. But just for the sake of argument, let's say you're right. I'm on track again now.
You're not on track again, and you're not all right.
That mulish look was back on her face. That look which said guard was talking trash, Bobby would just as soon not hear.
Look. Gardner said. I'm with you on at least one thing all the way. This is the biggest, most important, utterly mind-blowing thing that's ever happened. When it comes out, the headlines in the New York Times are going to make it look like the National Enquirer. People are going to change their fucking religions over this. Do you know it?
Yes,
This isn't a powder keg. It's an A-bomb. Do you know that?
Yes, Anderson said again.
Then get that pissed-off look off your face. If we're going to talk about it, let's fucking talk about it.
Anderson sighed. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I admit I was wrong about calling the Air Force.
They spoke together, then laughed together, and that was good. Still smiling, Guard said,
Something has to be done.
I'll buy that, Anderson said.
But Bobby, Jesus, I flunked chemistry and barely got through funny book physics. I don't know exactly, but I do know it's got to be, well, damped out or something.
We need some experts.
That's right, Gardner said, seizing on it. Experts.
Guard, all the experts work for the Dallas police. Gardner threw his hands up in disgust. Now that you're here, I'll be all right. I know it.
It's more likely to go the other way. Next thing, I'll start having blackouts.
Anderson said, I think the risk might be worth it.
You've decided already, haven't you?
I've decided what I want to do, yeah. What I want to do is keep quiet about it and finish the dig. Digging it all the way out shouldn't even be necessary. I think that once we can free it to a depth of another 40 or 50 feet, we could come to a hatchway.
If we can get inside.
Bobby's eyes gleamed, and Gardner felt an answering excitement rise in his own chest at the thought. All the doubts in the world could not hold back that excitement.
If we can get inside, Gardner repeated.
If we can get inside, we can get at the controls. And if we can do that, I'm going to fly that fucker right out of the ground.
You think you can do that?
I know I can.
And then?
Then I don't know, Bobby said, shrugging. It was the best, most efficient lie she had told so far, but Gardner thought it was a lie. The next thing will happen, that's all I know.
But you say it's my decision to make.
Yes, I do. As far as the outside world goes, all I can do is continue to not tell. If you decide you will, well, what can I do to stop you? Shoot you with Uncle Frank's shotgun? I couldn't. Maybe a character in one of my books could, but I couldn't. This, unfortunately, is real life, where there are no real answers. I guess in real life I'd just stand here watching you go. But whoever you called, Guard, scientists from the university up in Orono, biologists from Jennings Labs, physicists from MIT, whoever you called, it would turn out you'd actually called the Dallas police. You'd have people coming in here with trucks full of barbed wire and men with guns. She smiled a little. At least I wouldn't have to go to that police state club med alone.
No.
No, you're in it now, too. When they flew me out there, you'd be right beside me in the next seat. The wan smile broadened, but there still wasn't much humor in it. Welcome to the monkey house, my friend. Aren't you glad you came?
Charmed, Gardner said, and suddenly they were both laughing.
8. When the laughter passed, Gardner found that the atmosphere in Bobby's kitchen had eased considerably. Anderson asked, What do you think would happen to the ship if the Dallas police got hold of it?
Have you ever heard of Hangar 18?
Guard asked. No.
According to the stories, Hangar 18's supposed to be part of an Air Force base outside of Dayton or Dearborn or somewhere, anywhere, USA. It's where they're supposed to have the bodies of about 5 little men with fishy faces and gills on their necks, Saucerians. It's just one of those stories you hear, like how somebody found a rat head in his fast food burger, or how there are alligators in the New York sewers. Only now I sort of wonder if it is a fairy tale. But I think that would be the end.
Can I tell you one of those modern fairy tales, Guard?
Lay it on me.
Have you ever heard the one, she asked, about the guy who invented a pill to take the place of gasoline?
End of side 5. To continue, turn the cassette over.